mainstream media has already memory holed this entire story because they don't want to ask tough questions, but we're going to dive into that today.
Plus, is Real ID yet another way to track us, a violation from the Patriot Act left over from, you know, how they used 9/11 to continue to track and violate our civil rights?
Yeah.
Right? We're also going to talk about Harvey Weinstein because he's being retried. Now, he was the poster child for the Me Too movement, but maybe he didn't get a fair trial. What are they hiding from us? Why do they want us united against Harvey Weinstein? Now, we are not here to advocate for anybody except equal justice under the law. So we're going to have Lionel Nation joining us about that.
Also, where are the Epstein files? See, there's even an E missing in front of Epstein on the in our rundown here.
It's
where
purposeful.
It's purposeful because they're hiding it. Are we ever going to see the Epstein files? Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch is going to be joining us because they just filed a massive lawsuit to get to the bottom of these Epstein files. And I'm very excited to talk to Tom about that because they've been leading the charge on this. So that's coming up here a little bit later in the show. So, all right, we've got a lot of news to get to. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. Thank you guys for patience here as we're building our new studio out. And
you see, I started off camera. I'm like, hey, everybody.
Yeah.
What's going on? We're still getting it worked out.
Don't you move.
Okay.
I won't move. Let the team move.
I'm getting used to that. I'm finding you guys. Yeah. So we're still getting settled in here. So I apologize. Thanks for sticking with us through all the bugs. Before we get to, no. Okay. No, we're not going to do the sponsor first.
No, we're not.
We usually do. Sorry. Right,
we're going to get to that. Okay. All right. Well, let's get to it then, shall we? Let's get to the news. So we are learning some stunning new details about the latest would-be Trump assassin that the mainstream media has totally ignored. First, let's set the stage here. A 17-year-old kid murders his parents, lives with their bodies for 2 weeks, records a video of his stepdad's corpse surrounded by candles. And that's not even the most disturbing part of the story. If you can believe that, part of it, which is actually creepy enough as it is. No, this young assassin in training had foreign contacts, one of them based in Ukraine, at least one. There could be more, and there likely is more in Ukraine. The same place, of course, that the United States has been sending endless billions without a single receipt. The Democrats, of course, their favorite money laundering machine is, is the war in Ukraine. And Ukraine was his exit plan, using Ukraine to carry out the assassination and then exit afterwards and get back safely to Ukraine, where he would then be, taken care of. This teenager, Nikita Kasap, wasn't just fantasizing about violence. He was actively carrying this out. And he allegedly killed his own mother and stepfather to free himself financially and logistically to carry out an assassination plot on President Trump. Like these, in other words, his parents were holding him back from carrying out his plan. They were just getting in the way of all of this, and he was being, he was being held back by this. Well, now we have the new FBI affidavit today from the FBI agent working this case. I want to kind of go through this here because the DOJ and the FBI say his motive was crystal clear. Quote, to obtain the financial means and autonomy necessary to carry out the murder of Donald Trump. And you can read the affidavit for yourself. It's long. It's a stunning, stunning read. But it gets worse. Kasap wasn't just working alone. So you can throw out the lone gunman story if you want. And we now know that Thomas Crooks also wasn't working alone in Butler, Pennsylvania. None of these guys were working alone. Why isn't this the biggest story in mainstream media? Like, just take a pause here. If this was Barack Obama or Joe Biden, for that matter, and you found out that there was a criminal conspiracy that involved a foreign government and the intelligence community to kill a sitting president, it would be wall-to-wall coverage on CNN, on MSNBC. Turning on MSNBC today, no mention of it. Zero. CNN, the same thing. Zero. It's unbelievable. So according to the federal agents, Kasap was texting someone with a Ukrainian phone number and another person inside of Russia, Ukrainian sympathizer, both of whom were allegedly helping him figure out how to build a bomb-dropping drone, because they've been really good at this, dropping bombs with drones on them, right? Hitting apartment complexes, in the Belgorod region of Russia, flying them right into windows and killing civilians. So he literally asked them how to weaponize a drone, and his Ukrainian connections were helping him to commit presidential assassination on U.S. soil. And maybe there's nothing here, I'm sure. Maybe there's just nothing to look at all. I don't believe that for a second, of course. So were these people on the other end of that encrypted chat? Who were they? And why was one of them in Ukraine? I hope we learn who these people are from the DOJ. According to the affidavit, Kasip had fully immersed himself in the darkest corners of the internet. He was hanging out in a satanic cult forum. He loved neo-Nazis and was a big fan of Ukraine's Azov Battalion, the Nazis that the Biden administration aligned themselves with. And he was a big fan of the group called NSWP, National Socialism / White Power. So think of this guy kind of like as a mix. I was thinking of this guy kind of like as a mix between like Charles Manson, the Azov Battalion, and a Discord server from hell. And that's literally your guy trying to kill President Trump. Also, it's kind of interesting that Democrats love to call Trump a Nazi, and a literal Nazi was trying to kill him for not being Nazi enough. People conflate the two all the time, right? Nazis were socialists. Trump is the opposite of a socialist, so they hate him for that. They hate that he won't, you know, marginalize black people. They hate that he got a huge amount of vote in the Hispanic community during this last election.
They hate that he loves capitalism.
Yeah, exactly. They hate that he loves business. This is really, really, you know, detrimental to socialists and Nazis who really don't want that at all. So this assassin, this would-be assassin, Kasip, even wrote a manifesto calling for Trump's death, then talked about fleeing to Ukraine after the job was done. So let me ask this question. What kind of a teenager kills his parents, builds a bomb plot, and thinks that Ukraine is a safe zone for him after he carries out an assassination? Unless, of course, someone told him it would be a safe zone. So someone tells him Ukraine will take care of him. So then he allegedly kills his parents, then stays in the house with the parents' corpses for 2 full weeks. And he didn't just ignore the corpses. He actually filmed them with candles and made a video of his stepfather's body with candles surrounding it, like some sort of satanic cult ritual. And again, according to the FBI, this guy was in no rush at all. He had a plan. He was being methodical about it. He was calculating, according to the affidavit. And after the murders, the next move in his mind was, I'm going to Ukraine where I'll have a safe house. He even messaged one of his contacts, quote, I'm quoting him now, "So while in Ukraine, I'll be able to live a normal life, even when it's found out what I did?" Like he's asking, like, yeah, you've already assured me like this would be the case. So like, I'll be able to live a normal life there. Like I'll be sort of like praised over there. I mean, you don't ask a question like that unless you've been sort of led to believe the answer is yes. Am I wrong? I mean, that's the way that I read it. This isn't speculation. This is straight from the DOJ's affidavit. And why does the U.S. media cover it from one day and then they just suddenly memory hole the damn thing? Ukraine's numbers keep showing up on caller ID for these would-be assassins, like it did with Ryan Routh, the guy who tried to kill Trump at Mar-a-Lago on the golf course. The CIA knew exactly who Routh was. Of course they did. And that he was in Ukraine, of course, playing mercenary with his mercenary friends. So today, I mean, we can switch gears a little bit today because now we've got this hearing today. So
let me just play devil's advocate a little bit.
Would be a devil and you would be advocate. Yeah. It's appropriate.
Is it possible? I mean, you can get a Google Voice Ukrainian number, right? And so is it possible then that there's another group trying to make it look like this is Ukrainian? That clearly is possible. But why? Right. And so why is no one asking these questions?
So sort of like
why
a trap?
Would somebody? Yes. Right.
Maybe.
Well, yeah,
we don't know.
Cause like I would question that, like a government getting involved in this simply for the fact that, let's say they were successful, what has changed? Like if Ukraine is trying to change their own, like, you know, political landscape. What then? Now J.D. Vance is there, and has he given any indication that he's going to be pro-Ukraine and turn the money back on for the war effort? I mean, how far down the chain would they have to go before they'd find a sympathetic person? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, these assassination attempts were while Trump was a candidate, though. And so for
he was president elect at this point.
Okay.
Right. So
yes,
Ryan Ralph was president elect.
You get J.D. Vance, and J.D. Vance has the same platform about ending the war in Ukraine. But for Ryan Ralph, at least, they wanted to prevent a Trump presidency. And they probably were banking on the fact that J.D. Vance couldn't get elected on his own, or the Republicans could not replace him with another person of this ideology.
Yeah. I mean, and now this one, of course, just happened. So now, but here's my question is, like, how many more have we not even learned about, right? How many more of these have been kept quiet from us right now? And how many more of this do we have, like, Ukrainian connections with? So let's just talk about Ryan Routh, because today, big news in the Ryan Routh story, the man accused of trying to assassinate President Trump was back in court today. And we're getting more confirmation of everything we already warned you about here on this show. And, you know, people, oh, you guys are conspiracy theorists. And then you go in court and they actually talk about it in front of a judge. So glad to be called a conspiracy theorist. So let's be clear. This is the same guy we told you about weeks ago who allegedly tried to buy a rocket launcher from someone in Ukraine using encrypted Telegram messages. That's not new. Of course, you heard it here when we first reported that a few weeks ago here on the show. We reported on the encrypted messages. We reported the RPG request. We reported the quote about Trump being, quote, bad for Ukraine that they got from his Telegram messages with Ukrainian weapons dealers. All of it. But today's hearing in Florida federal court just cemented what prosecutors are building here, that this, in fact, was a conspiracy. So prosecutors laying out before the judge that this is a conspiracy. This guy wasn't a lone wolf. He was not a lone gunman. He had help. Prosecutors say this wasn't some unstable guy with a grudge. This was a politically motivated assassination plot with Ukrainian entanglements. So once again, the word Ukraine is sitting front and center today in court in Florida. Prosecutors are going all in on the Ukrainian connection. They reiterated that Routh went to encrypted apps, tried to procure military-grade weapons, not from Craigslist, not from some gun show, but from Ukraine. And as we played you a soundbite from Tucker a few weeks ago here on the show, over 50% of all of these weapons have been sold on the black market. They're getting them, receiving them, and selling them off to terrorists, known terrorists, and drug cartels. So that's two attempted assassins, two Ukrainian connections. And we don't know to what lengths, you know, Thomas Crooks may have been connected using encrypted applications on forums and so forth with Ukraine. We don't know that. Of course, his body was burned almost immediately and cremated so that no one could analyze that. Like, I really hope that we get some answers from Pam Bondi now and Kash Patel, because that was the FBI under Biden that just took his body and just cremated it, like, right away. His apartment was, like, totally wiped clean, no silverware, no nothing. Like, who was this ghost in Butler, Pennsylvania? So what the hell is going on here? Of course, the corporate media won't touch that question, ignoring their money laundering operation in Ukraine. Routh's trial, by the way, is set to begin on September 8th. So let's see if he actually survives to see that trial and we hear public evidence in trial, because this guy, you know, he's on a path to, like, Epstein Island, you know, Epsteining himself, because maybe a lot of information might actually come out during this trial that the deep state doesn't absolutely want in front of the American people. So let us know your thoughts on that.
All right. Before we move on to talk about more serious matters, I want to let you know that I am feeling super inspired by these all-female Blue Origin space crew to do more math and science. I really am excited about that. I'm just so happy that women are now better represented by these ladies who were passengers on a 3-minute space tour. But wait a minute. Was it real? Now, that's what's trending around the internet today.
Wait a minute. It's all fake?
Well, there's a lot of fake stuff you see on your screen when I put that picture up. Absolutely. Can we just put it back up again?
There's a lot of plastic surgery.
Probably none of them have that real hair color. There's a lot of Botox fillers. Yes, absolutely. There's a lot that's fake that I can confirm is fake, but let's look at what the evidence is that maybe the entire mission was fake. Now, we could see the whole stream from soup to nuts, but once it passed the atmosphere, we couldn't see the outside of the capsule. So, okay. Some people are saying, though, that the fact that the ladies opened the door to the pod themselves only to be told to close it so that Jeff Bezos could come over with his muscle shirt and use a wrench to get it open and rescue them, yeehaw cowboy style, proves that it's fake. Now, the New Shepard is the vessel that they traveled in. It does have a release mechanism. We're going to watch it here. See, they open it, and then this lady says, no, no, not yet. Don't open it. Can we rewind that, restack it a second so you can see that it does open for a second, and then they're like, no, girls, no, no, stay put. And so this is the part that people are saying was totally faked. So see here, they go up, the girls open it, and then they have to wait. And Jeff Bezos is holding this wrench that apparently opens.
Doesn't really need it because the girls on the inside already opened this thing.
Right. And so was that a camera op or is it supposed to open? Now, again, the New Shepard does have a release mechanism from the inside in case, for whatever reason, the wind blew them way off course and they were put somewhere that the rescue vehicles couldn't open and they were stuck in there starving, no water, no bathroom, right? Then they could open it from the inside. So they had already opened it, but then why is he standing there with that wrench? Is that just a photo opportunity? Oddly enough, I did ask ChatGPT about there because I love to see what the mainstream narrative is, and usually AI gives it to me. And so AI said, yes, this is suspicious, but Blue Origin is basically a fancy roller coaster to space and back. Take a look. It says, well, other missions had more complicated doors and release mechanisms so they couldn't open it up and blow themselves to smithereens in space. But New Shepard, no big deal, because it's basically a fancy roller coaster to space and back. Now, another major issue I have is this heavily edited footage of them fooling around with toys and flowers. Now think about this as I show you this 1 minute and 3 second video. They had 4 minutes total in space. That's 240 seconds, but they used at least a quarter to a third of it taking selfies and playing with toys. So you have to think to yourself, if I have 4 minutes total in space, am I gonna F around with a camera and these toys and this like girl shot? Watch.
Got it?
One, two, three,
taking
up space!
Woo! Oh. Tamir's in space!
Right behind you. It's okay. Leave Lynn up there.
I would just be staring out the window the whole time.
Here's Katie. No, she's staring at herself.
They're looking at each other, like, what the hell?
Yes, at each other, which they've been doing for months in preparation for this.
Look at me.
Oh, the moon! You guys! I will have to tell you, look at the moon. That's amazing.
Wow, look at the blue line.
Oh my gosh. Oh my god.
Wow.
Oh my That's our pink moon.
Okay.
Oh. So they're not even looking out the window. 240 seconds oh is gosh. All you have in space.
And then you're coming back.
Yeah, and you're playing with your shit.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's amazing.
Like, let's play a whole game of checkers. Let's bring up a whole bunch of pieces and,
Oh, it's time to go down now? Oh, shoot. I'm so sorry that I messed around with these ladies that I'm not even close personal friends with, but are other influencers. It's outrageous.
Yeah, the listener in our chat says, wow, what the hell? This is cringe. Oh.
Beyond. And I am so shocked that they've left all their social media comments open because it is a PR disaster. Most people are just thinking that this is such a sham. It's such an influencer campaign. It's inspiring nobody. Here's another problem I have with this because I was listening to the live stream while I drove my daughter to school. And one of the hosts of the live stream on Blue Origin was a woman named Kristen Ann Fisher. She is the daughter of NASA astronaut Dr. Anna Lee Fisher. So in the prep for the launch on Monday, Fisher talked about being a woman and an astronaut, and she said that her mother went to space when she was only 15 months old and was chosen for that mission while she was still 8 months pregnant. And she explained it saying her mom really felt that she had something to prove as a woman, which I found incredibly offensive because no woman has anything to prove while they're pregnant. You're literally doing magic while you're pregnant. This is not feminism saying that being pregnant is not enough.
Yeah, you also need to go to space.
So I need to prove myself. Like, while you're pregnant, you have shit all to prove. While you're pregnant to anyone. So frame this as I have to show something to the world is crap. And I made sure to tell my daughter, do you hear how offensive that is? That you have to be an astronaut to prove something and being a mom is not enough. That is not feminism. I reject it wholeheartedly. Even the New York Times, which I always disagree with, does not like this. They say that this only proves that several women have amassed the social capital to be friends with Lauren Sanchez, who had the social capital to land Jeff Bezos as a fiance. They also say that this is a great point. Hadn't thought of this is done for male fantasy, not for female empowerment. Buff, bald, rich, midlife crisis boyfriend uses his expensive toys to send Barbie fiance with her friends to space. So I don't like anything about it. I'm not feeling inspired. I don't think this is a good lesson for my daughters of what feminism should look like, but I'm loving the memes about it because there is almost nobody to say anything positive about it. Here's a fun meme and there's so many of these. And if you see more, please tag me in them because I've had a rough week and I need to see more like this.
Go through your whole life not knowing how much love you have inside of you until the day you launch.
Baby, you're a firework. Come on, show the world.
A wonderful
It was music. I'm sorry about that. We're not supposed to play music on YouTube. But anyway, when Katy Perry came back, she says she was feeling so much love, so connected to love. Lauren Sanchez said we're all in it together by looking at the earth from a different vantage point. She really felt like we're all in it together. Katy Perry said she really wanted to learn more about STEM and science. They had a 2-day training. So I don't know if maybe she learned a lot. And if you want to get on a rocket she builds next, be my guest. So let me know your thoughts.
What happens when she goes on a roller coaster? She's like, I really want to become an engineer and a physicist. Like,
right. Yeah. And all like right. More women need to be represented in transportation. So I'm going to go ride the bus after this for a while.
Okay.
And there you go.
One person that says, oh man, you are really jealous of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely. Clearly you really want to go to space.
Well, here's another thing. This woman who left her 15-month-old to go to space, like that's also a choice that I can't abide as a mother. That's very dangerous. What if your daughter becomes motherless because you had something to prove because having her was not enough in your life? I don't connect with this as a woman at all. But if you want to see it as jealousy, that's cool. Yeah, I don't care.
All right, we got a lot more news to get to here. We're going to speak with Lionel coming up in just a moment about the Harvey Epstein story. Is he getting a new fair
Weinstein
trial?
You have your perverts mixed up.
What did I call him? Harvey Epstein?
Yeah.
Harvey Epstein. Harvey Weinstein. He's still alive. And is he going to have a new trial here? We're going to talk about that. Plus, Real ID. Get ready for Real ID. Kristi Noem, you know, wants you to get ready because, you know, Patriot Act is still in effect. And this is the new reality for all of us with American IDs and the biometric database and everything else that the United States is planning on rolling out. We're going to talk about that in a second. But first,
we want to tell you about our sponsors over at Shopify, because Shopify is not only a sponsor of our show, but we use it for the Redacted store as well. So we are Shopify customers. Shopify has everything you need to grow your business and to launch your business. So if you have a great idea to launch anything, whether it be clothes or a service or what have you, Shopify is where you start and end because they can help you get started. In fact, that's the Redacted store that runs on Shopify. So anytime we have an idea for something new that we think that you might like as a listener of Redacted, then we can launch it quite easily. Not only do they handle the graphics, but they also handle the back end plus the payment system. So it really, they have great customer service. If you get confused, you don't have to know design. You don't have to know e-commerce. They do it all for you. So right now you can sign up for a 1-month trial period today by going to shopify.com/redacted. One more time, that's shopify.com/redacted. It's everything you need to grow your business.
All right, well, Real ID, get ready. Are you guys ready for Real ID? The way that the government will track you, of course, will track you and do everything to make sure that they know where you are at all times of the day. This, of course, is a holdover from the Patriot Act. Well, here is your Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem, to give you a warning. She dropped this public service announcement on X. Watch.
Hi, I'm Kristi Noem, the United States Secretary of Homeland Security. If you plan on traveling, we need your help to prevent delays and to prove your identity. Get a Real ID. Starting May 7th, you will need a Real ID to travel by air or to visit federal buildings in the United States. These IDs keep our country safe because they help prevent fraud and they enhance security. Please do your part to protect our country. Go today and don't delay. To learn more, go to dhs.gov/real-ID. Thank you.
Now, we've been warning about the Real ID for a long time here, and now it's finally coming. A lot of Americans have already gotten it, and they don't see any trouble with it. Harrison Berger is an independent journalist. He's been on this story for a long time and is here to talk about this. Harrison, welcome to the show. Great to see you from Brazil today, from Buenos Aires. Great to see you.
From Rio de Janeiro. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Rio de Janeiro.
I was going to say Buenos Aires is in Argentina.
My brain is, sorry, I apologize. Welcome from Brazil. And so let's talk about this. Americans are sort of like blindly kind of going along with this, but this is a holdover, of course, from the Patriot Act, is it not? And why should Americans be concerned about Real ID?
It is, and in fact, it's written by the same authors, which makes sense because it's essentially trying to do the same thing, more government surveillance and control over Americans. And let me just remind people what our Fourth Amendment says, because I think we so often forget. It says that there will not be any unlawful or unreasonable searches and seizures, and it protects you against that from the federal government. But since I've been alive pretty much, because I was born in 2001, I'm 23 years old, we've had this erosion of our privacy rights and Fourth Amendment protection, starting with the Patriot Act, now with this Real ID. And so it's not surprising that that's happening right now, because the Trump administration is embracing many of the same tactics as the war on terror. We have this rendition program now where we're sending people to El Salvador. And Kristi Noem from the DHS has announced that she's going to be screening visa applicants for anti-Semitism. And so it makes sense that they're doing this, pulling this tool out of the old war on terror bag and trying to revive this old legislation now at this moment.
Can you explain more about the purpose of Real ID from a government standpoint? Not what they're telling us, but what the actual purpose is, because Representative Thomas Massey said that this is proof that your physical person matches their entry in a database. So can you expand on that, please?
Yeah, I mean, basically the data that's printed on these IDs would all be standardized and shared with a single network. That's not what we have right now. Each state controls how they want to ID each of their citizens. That's under the 10th Amendment that we have that. This is a total reversal of that, and it's really a radical change. They want to standardize it and make it national, which makes it easier for the government to track and monitor you. Again, it makes sense why they're doing this, because this is the game that they've been playing for so long.
I mean, is Real ID just really that first step towards, you know, government-controlled digital ID and putting us all on, you know, digital currency, central bank digital currency, you know, all the talks about what we're going to see at the border, of course, biometric scanning coming in, like all of us will be tracked forever. There's no way really to get away from it.
I mean, what's really amazing about this is that I thought it was conservatives who were warning about this. I remember in 2022 yes. when it was Jim Jordan and Thomas Massey who were warning against the DHS, who at the time had the Disinformation Governance Board led by Nina Jenkowicz censoring Americans. They were monitoring Americans, monitoring their school board meetings, monitoring their church attendance, all of this. And it was really Mike Johnson and Jim Jordan in Congress who made a big stink about this. But now that Trump is in charge, and you know they have free rein to go after their political enemies, they've completely abandoned their principles, and now they're wielding the same framework against their own political enemies. It makes you wonder if we're just in this cycle where every 4 years, each political faction, each partisan faction will wield these newly weaponized tools against their enemies, and America is all the worse for it in the end.
Right, because now we see Democrats speaking out against ID laws, you know, which is something, I mean, they have been for voting for a long time. But so any incumbent party will be for it, and then their challenger will be against it, and then that will just flip-flop. And so it's us that needs to stay consistent. And so is this the same kind of tracking ability, though, that the government already has if you have a passport? Because a passport can be a stand-in for a real ID.
I mean, you make a good point. The fact is that the government already has all sorts of tools to monitor you and know everything that you do, everything that you search on the internet, who you talk to. They have all these ways to break encryption. So even your Signal chats and your Telegram chats, they can see who you're talking to. You raise a great question. What else more do they need? But apparently they do need more. They do need to know where we are at all times and basically coerce every American to register with the federal government under this new ID program, which is really novel and revolutionary.
I mean, what happens to individuals who refuse to comply? I mean, there's a lot of people in our audience that are saying, "No, I'm not getting real ID. I'm not going to do it." Do they lose their rights to travel freely within the United States? And you know, like, and would you? I mean, I know I'm asking you kind of a huge question here, but can states step in and say, no, we are sort of a free of real ID state, you know, in Nevada or Arizona, you don't need it here, and therefore come here as like a safe haven?
Well, it has been a state's rights issue for a long time, going back to 2012, 2011. There were groups like the Cato Institute and the ACLU. You had this kind of convergence of left-right interests against this, based on what you're saying now, that it's the state's right to decide how they identify each of their residents and citizens. So, you know, what the repercussions could be for people who don't register, I mean, I think we could look to what happened with COVID. I think we can anticipate that people who don't comply with these orders will face some sorts of punishments. What that will be to be determined, but that's what I would anticipate.
Right. And what do you think, what if you refuse, but you want to drive across the border? And then, I mean, that's, we should have the right to do that. I mean, maybe you don't.
Is that a federal crime?
Right.
I mean, all of this is in question now. The fact is that they passed this law a long time ago with the Patriot Act, as you mentioned, but they failed to enforce it for this exact reason, because each state, like New York and Connecticut, they have different rules about this. That, you know, Connecticut has this real ID. They've had it for a while, but New York has not. And so it creates a lot of confusion. And just like really everything that the DHS has done since 9/11, including the ramping up the security at TSA, where we all have to undress, there's no real point to it. It doesn't seem like it makes us safer. There's no evidence that it stopped any terror attacks, because, in fact, we've still had these terror attacks on our soil, like in Boston, that DHS or the FBI or any of these groups failed to stop. It just seems like a way to hassle us. You know, Gore Vidal wrote about this a long time ago. He called it the shredding of the Bill of Rights. And I think that's exactly what's happening now. It was very prescient.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Yeah. So we all have to take off our shoes because some moron, by the way, a British citizen, Richard Reed, you know, decided to put, you know, like some little sticky gum explosives in his shoe that, you know, now we all have to take off our damn shoes. I feel so much safer because of that. This is ridiculous. This is just another way that the Patriot Act continues to rear its ugly head. Harrison, great to see you. Thank you so much for your perspective on this. And it seems like this is going to be the law of the land here really soon, unless we have more Thomas Massey standing up to fight against it. Harrison, great to see you. Thank you so much for your perspective.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, coming up, we're going to talk about, did Harvey Weinstein get a fair trial because he was used for a female empowerment movement, the Me Too movement, but is there more there behind? He's going to be retried this week. What is there to see? Lionel has been tracking this from the Lionel Nation YouTube channel, so he will tell us where to look, not the mainstream media. But before we get there, Clayton will tell you about...
I'm going to tell you about our friends over at Bunker, because, you know, Bunker has been a great sponsor for Redacted. They are having tremendous growth, and they're doing it slowly and intentionally and methodically, instead of these other apps that are exploding like, Telegram and Signal. So let me tell you about Bunker, okay? It's a way for you to protect your lives from surveillance, cyber criminals, and other threats. And what you do is Bunker is an uncompromised private messenger together with a password manager, a secure vault, and notes that work seamlessly together. private messaging and sharing. Send messages and leverage Bunker sharing capabilities for passwords, documents, notes, photos, and videos. You can create to-do lists, travel, business, private reflections, recipes, workouts, all of that taken care of inside of Bunker. Over 130 countries, Bunker customers enjoy peace of mind. You can travel with greater ease, have more energy to focus on what matters. So right now, you can get 25% off. Download Bunker today from the App Store. That's B-U-N-K-R .life. And use the code REDACTED to get 25% off. Live life to the fullest. Protect what matters most. Download Bunker today.
All right. Well, Harvey Weinstein is being retried this week in New York. Being against him seemed like an open and shut case. It basically launched us into the Me Too era. But something that was not obvious to everyone is that he may not have had a fair trial. And we're not advocating for Harvey Weinstein. We're advocating for equal justice under the law. What is there that the mainstream media won't tell us about? Well, Lionel from Lionel Nation is a litigator and constitutional expert. His Lionel Nation YouTube channel breaks all this down. He's been following Weinstein. He's been following Diddy. He's been following Epstein. So Lionel, thank you for joining us. What is there to retry in the Weinstein case? Oh, I don't hear you. Do you hear him?
Oh, he's muted.
Oh. There we go. How's
there
that?
There we go. All right. Yeah. What's there to be seen?
Yes. In the case of Harvey Epstein, which I think is a perfect truncation of both of them. Here's the bottom line. There is the reason why this was overturned, and I'm 100% for it, is that there is something in law called prior or similar fact evidence. And in New York, there was a case in 1901 called the Molyneux case. And what it means is this. If you, as a prosecutor, have to prove something like intent or plan or lack of mistake, I can use your prior instances of wrongdoing that you have not been charged with to make a case. Let's say, for example, Natalie, you're charged with arson. And in prior arsons, you used a particular way of taking baby dolls and soaking them in gasoline. This is actually kind of an example that's used. And you had this unique MO, this thing that you did every time you left playing cards and a note. And we don't know who it is this time, but this arsonist did exactly what you did in a prior case under the cases of similar fact evidence, I can bring that before a jury to say, see, this is Natalie, because this behavior is similar to other behavior that she might not have been charged with. That makes sense. If there's confusion, if there's a reason. In the case of Harvey Weinstein, why do we have evidence or cases of other women claiming he attempted to abuse them? What's the purpose of this? There was no question as to who it was. It was Harvey Weinstein. He didn't have a unique MO. He didn't say anything. There was no evidence. There was no benefit other than to tell the jury, where there's smoke, there's fire. And if you don't find them guilty of this one, well, this no good SOB did this in the past. And that is precisely what the appellate court said. Now, other people are saying, No. This is attempt to address the Me Too movement, and I'm all for that. But the problem is when relevant evidence, so-called relevant evidence, is so prejudicial that a jury says, well, you didn't tell me about these other cases. Well, he must be guilty then. And that's where we're headed. So I don't like him. And between you and me, he probably did everything they said he did. Oh, 80 women, we've heard about this creep, but this is a courtroom. And whether it's Donald Trump or Harvey Weinstein or anybody, you have to ask yourself, why aren't we talking about this case with these victims, this evidence now? Who cares what he did before? If I could give one more example that happens all the time. In the case where there's a terrible case, let's say of a child who's murdered, this happens more often than not. You have to identify the body. You have to identify the deceased. In the old days, prosecutor would show the worst picture, the most horrible picture of the child, let's say, in the morgue, to, let's say, a mother. The mother would scream, that's my baby. And courts would say, wait a minute. That's relevant, of course, the identity of the deceased, but this outweighs any prejudice towards the defendant. We have to balance this. I don't care if you're Son of Sam, Harvey Weinstein, or Harvey Epstein, or anybody for that matter. You don't need this. Why don't we just take the words of these women alone? Tell me what happened. Where were
you? But how can they do that, though? Because every juror is going to know the reputation of Harvey Weinstein. So you can't say, forget that he, you know, ejaculated into a plant or was mean to Salma Hayek and abused her on set or anything. And let's just see, did he do this thing to this one victim and was it rape?
They may not know that. I'm sure. Listen, this idea of everybody is. Do you think Diddy can get a fair trial? Do you think, you know, the last time we ever had a change of venue, remember that relic from time gone by? I think the best case ever was, this is before your time, Murph the Surf. This guy was so, Son of Sam Shepard was another case where the evidence. Do you think O.J. Simpson, do you think today, in this world of social media that we live in, anybody can go anywhere? Of course not. But it's one thing, Natalie, to say, oh, I remember the thing about the planter or about this. Or maybe I don't. But when I have women in a courtroom who said, well, let me tell you something. You're on trial for parking tickets. And somebody brings up the fact that You were charged with shoplifting at a Costco. I say, wait a minute, what does that have to do with anything? It shows a criminal propensity. Well, that is verboten. Now, I know this guy is a creep, but here's the question. What defense does he have? You don't need to do this. Put a woman on the stand and say, here's what happened. This is what he did. This is where I was. This is what he told me. And that's it. Harvey's not going to take the stand to refute it. You don't need this overkill. And plus, let me ask you this. What about having women outside the courtroom chanting his name, chanting, you know, basically hang him? It's like a lynch mob outside. Do you think anybody deserves that? Now, it's hard to tell people outside whether you can protest or not. But when it seeps through the windows, I mean, listen, you're going to find the guy guilty. Give him at least a chance. And I'm not suggesting he has any kind of a defense. There is, but this similar fact evidence, prosecutors are too lazy with it. There has to be a reason, especially if there's a case. It has come in handy before where you have somebody who is, let's say, kidnapped. They can't ID the defendant. Yeah. He wore a mask. Well, in this other case, he wore the identical mask. People, so that makes sense. But even he deserves this. And let me tell you something. He and Diddy and others, once you're charged, let's face it, you're through. You are done. You're finished. And I'm going to say the worst thing, friends, that Harvey Weinstein has so little jury appeal. He's hideous. He's disgusting. There's nothing about him where you even, he's no Luigi Mangione. There's nobody out there. Collect, you know,
Taylor Lorenz is in love with him.
Right. Maybe she would. So, you know, the criminal justice defines and requires that we give people a fair trial, not a perfect trial, but a fair trial. Give the guy a break. You don't need three witnesses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we got to leave it there, Lionel. We are such a jam-packed show for you, but I think you're right, and I think you're absolutely right that he is a hideous he's a hideous human being. He's a hideous looking human being. A lot of people in the chat are like, "Wow, that guy is just repugnant on every level." He is.
I hope you're not talking about me.
A fair trial.
I guess the question though that still remains is though if they did not give him a fair trial, if they sold us this, you know, worse than he already was story, to what end? What were they manipulating us to rally around the Me Too movement? What did we get from it and what weren't we told? So those are questions we'll continue to explore. Again, we're not advocating for Harvey Weinstein. We're asking, what were we collectively invited to champion and to what end and who gained power from it? So those are the outstanding questions.
Lionel, great to see you. Thank you so much on a busy news day on this Tuesday. We appreciate it. As always, great to see you.
Thank you, friends.
Thanks, Lionel. All right, let's talk now about the, you know, we've been talking Harvey Weinstein, and then I conflated the two and call him Harvey Epstein. But now we're talking about the Jeffrey Epstein files. And Judicial Watch has just announced it filed a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Justice for records regarding Jeffrey Epstein. And a man who I have the greatest respect for is Tom Fitton. And from Judicial Watch, who's really leading this charge to get answers for the American people. We keep hearing, just wait, the plan is coming together. Don't worry, you know, don't worry about it. The plan is coming together. Americans just need to sit back. But Tom is not waiting on that. And God bless him for that. Tom joins us now from Judicial Watch. Great to see you. Real pleasure to have you here on the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So why now? Why did you decide to sue the Department of Justice for these Epstein files now?
Well, we saw kind of the mess that happened early in February and asked for records about the Epstein records. We saw the public interest there. So let's use FOIA to get some reassurances to the people that the records are being reviewed under law, and we get a record of what they have and what they don't have and what they don't want to give us, et cetera. And so we filed relatively simple requests, give us records about Epstein. We also wanted records from the Attorney General and the FBI director about the efforts to produce the records that seemingly were obstructed, according to their public statements by some FBI folks. It's unclear what happened there. You know, and my concern is that we get these, and I'm all in favor of transparency, but when you get these public leaks, you're not sure what you're getting. Right. Are they withholding documents? I don't know. What else is out there? I don't, you know, who knows? Maybe they don't even know. But the FOIA process gives you some more reassurance in that regard. And I would encourage the FBI and the Justice Department to take advantage of this lawsuit, really, to release everything they can under law.
Right. I mean, this sort of gives them a little bit of cover here. I think that's a great point. I hadn't thought about that. You know, hey, we have these FOIA requests, these Freedom of Information Act requests. There might have been, maybe federal agencies that were working with Jeffrey Epstein, confidential informant information that we couldn't release because it could, you know, implicate other people in the agencies. But now our hands are kind of tied because of this lawsuit, and through the discovery process or otherwise, we have to release this information.
It's a straightforward process if there's a commitment to transparency. And I generally think that they do want to release the records, but they're kind of stuck either by the volume or some of the issues related to withholdings that they recognize they may have to make that they weren't anticipating making. And the best way to deal with that is let the public know what the issues are. I mean, we had the JFK records released. We don't know what those were about either. What's been withheld?
Right.
To me, transparency 101, which is what's the federal law that applies to the release of government records typically, the Freedom of Information Act. Rely on that to get the records out. And that reassures the public generally that there's a process in place that, you know, we can go to court if there's an issue, right? At least there's that check. These leaks to date haven't provided that check to the American people, which is why they've been to me, it's one reason why the releases have been received so negatively.
And so who do you think are the parties that would push against this? What are the government's tools to not comply with your request that you would then, what are the brick walls?
I mean, my experience is the resting state of the deep state is secrecy. So everyone doesn't want it to come out. There's always a reason not to release something. And this is why the leadership of the agencies, both the FBI and Justice Department, really have to err on the side of transparency, overrule the exemptions that are typically asserted for documents such as this. You know, there's going to be a lot of fights about privacy, whose names are going to be released. People who haven't been charged with crimes, but whose names show up, well, how is it you release that information? Is there national security information in a serious way here at issue? I doubt it, but much of what we're asking for can be released, and the decision to withhold it is typically purely discretionary. I mean, if someone's Social Security number's there, that might be an issue if they released it. Pretty much anything else, they can release at their own discretion.
I mean, when you've pulled the thread on this, are there things that, you know, jumped out to you that you want to keep pulling that thread? You find that it's going to lead you down a dark corridor in all of your work on the Epstein story?
I think this is going to be more a straightforward case than people presume. The questions that people have are because of the lack of transparency. And when you have lack of transparency, people presume the worst. And who's to argue with them, since the government's, in this case, now outside the law in terms of refusing to provide information. So the Epstein case is about a politically connected individual who engaged in the worst sort of criminal activity. The feds had him dead to rights. They let him off. He was friendly with a lot of people in power. So there should be questions about what those people knew and when, and what was their involvement with his illicit activities. And some of those answers might be exonerate individuals. You know, there are many people who say, "Don't just because I knew him doesn't mean I'm a bad guy." But there are others who probably have reasons to hide. But the concern Americans have is that they don't know everyone who's been involved with him. And their concern is that the government knows more than they're giving up. And the way to alleviate that concern is just to release the information.
From what you've seen,
Melinda Gates has a new book out saying that, I mean, she's completely distancing herself from it. Like, I knew something was off when Bill had this relationship. He turned my stomach. And so we see all of these public figures distancing themselves for that. So that heightens our spidey sense. So we suspect that something is afoul. So you're right. The narrative makes us innately distrustful.
And I was going to play off that a little bit, Tom, which is what Natalie was just saying. Are there people, you talked about people who might be exonerated, but are there people who, you know, that you've seen that maybe we haven't, that really should be scared about this, that probably should seek cover right now?
You can rhyme them if you don't want to say their names. Like,
yeah, I literally have no idea. What's in the documents? I don't know what's in the documents. And anyone who tells you they know what's out there and what hasn't been released, who knows? I mean, when you hear them talk about a truckload of documents and a handful of those records are released in the first big tranche in February, who knows what's in there?
Yeah.
And all we can do is just ask for the records under law and get what we're able to get. So at least more questions are answered. Now, are all the questions going to be answered? No. I mean, I've been doing this too long to recognize that even if the government releases records, you know, the records themselves are proof of more government cover-ups and such. So who knows?
Yeah.
But the key step is to be transparent.
Yeah. Well, one of the big pieces, people keep talking about the documents, but I mean, we know from our reporting that there's, I mean, terabytes of video evidence from the residence. Where does the video evidence from his house in Upper East Side and also Epstein Island come into play in your Freedom of Information Act lawsuit?
Well, that's a good question. Typically, if there's video that's responsive, then they should be turning it over to us.
Wow.
I'm also interested in how he died. I mean, we're supposed to pretend that was normal. There was nothing normal about it. At the time he died, he was the most famous prisoner in the entire federal prison system. And they let him die.
Yeah.
Now, by his own hand, it's alleged. Others suggest it was something, and not just, you know, some guy on the street suggesting it. But if I recall, was it Cyril Wecht who suggested there was something? I was thinking of Michael Bodwin. Yeah, Cyril Reck was another.
Yeah, Michael Bodwin, one of the famous, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Not coroner.
Autopsist. I just made that up.
I can't think of the name.
Coroner. Medical examiner.
Medical examiner. Yes. Well, I mean, I've interviewed him countless times back when I used to work on Fox, and I mean, he would, you know, he said, absolutely, this was not suicide. 100%. This was not suicide.
So what are the records about that whole issue? We haven't gotten any records about that. If there are records about the circumstances of his death that have been released under FOIA, I'd be curious to find them, but we're asking for them through this request.
Yeah.
Tom, I'll get you out of here on this. I know you're slammed busy because of this lawsuit and what you're dealing with right now. How do you think Pam Bondi has handled this so far, you know, handing out these like binders to these like social media influencers and the whole thing? How do you think it's been handled so far under the Trump administration?
You know, I don't know what was going on there. My impression was there was a lot of pressure and concern that material wasn't coming out, and the Justice Department just pushed out whatever they had sitting around and to kind of give themselves some breathing room, and it didn't work out the way they anticipated. You know, my view is you should act with due speed, but correctly, to get information out. To reassure the American people that this is being taken seriously. More public commentary, even on the status of the release of this information, would be good as well.
Right. Well, Tom, I'm a big fan. I've admired your work for a long time, so it's a real treat to have you here. And when I saw that you guys filed this lawsuit, I said, absolutely, let's get Tom on the show. So keep us updated. We'd love to have you back on as this unfolds.
We'll see what we get.
Good luck. Yeah. Tom, great to see you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, check out Judicial Watch. Yep. Go over to their website. You can read through the lawsuit and the press release there for it. It's really fascinating.
What I'd be interested in... I'd really be interested to see what records are in these files of Alex Acosta, the original like prosecutor that gave mm-hmm. him that sweetheart deal that he got off the first time and then went to work in Trump's DOJ. And so I would be curious to know like what if any of that prosecutorial information or like files would be in any of that, because I'd like to know the thought process behind that sweetheart deal to begin with.
Right.
Why'd this guy, and then you know, it'll be interesting to see then the people that after that deal was made, they continued like to do business with the guy,
yeah,
or develop new relationships with the guy mm-hmm. in the case of like Bill Gates and so forth.
Yeah.
But I do like what Tom said
RFK
there.
RFK Jr. had a friendship with him.
Yeah, he flew on his plane multiple times.
Yeah.
I like what Tom said there, which is like, no one knows. So people that think they know, they don't until we see these documents. And by the way, I mean, to see the terabytes of video footage that Judicial Watch might be able to get their hands on with this lawsuit is, I mean, good luck trying to sort through all that. But
telling, but I wouldn't want to watch it. I wouldn't want to watch it.
No, thank you. There
are not enough showers left in my life.
Nope. No. Oh, Bill Clinton's landing here once again. Didn't we just see him a few tapes ago on the hard drive here? Oh, he's back. He's back to Epstein Island. Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. But before we go, we want to remind you that Redacted is brought to you by Tax Network USA. Today is tax day, you guys. Today's the 15th. And if you've fallen behind on filing taxes or you owe back taxes, then delaying will only make things worse. But if you have a powerful advocate on your side, you could make a good deal with the IRS. And that's what Tax Network USA does. With over 5,000 new tax liens filed every day and the IRS has powerful enforcement tools now, then we just don't know what the IRS is going to do if you have back taxes. So don't make the mistake of facing them alone. Let Tax Network USA help you take control. Whether your issue is $10,000 or $10 million, their team of skilled attorneys and seasoned negotiators have solved over $1 billion in tax debt using proven strategies. So call them today at 800-958-1000. You get a free consultation, absolutely free. They can just tell you what services they offer and if they can help you. Or you can visit tnusa.com/redacted. It's free and it's confidential. So again, don't wait until after April 15th today to make a move. Beat the IRS to it. Be proactive. Call them 800-958-1000 or get a free private consultation by going to tnusa.com. /redacted. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. Again, we will be back tomorrow. We're live 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific every day. Hey, don't forget, we have a newsletter. You can head on over to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and you'll get the newsletter every single day. It is free. There's nothing behind a paywall, no upsell, no cross sell. It's just something that we like to provide you. Writing the newsletter not only helps you sort of study up for what the show is going to be and read original source material, helps us prepare as well, because we are a family business. It's Clayton and I. We're a married couple, so we compile the newsletter. We compile the show. We have a small team, and we just really like interacting with you and having our free voices in an independent media. So thank you so much for being a subscriber to Redacted and to the Redacted newsletter. And we'll see you tomorrow, everybody.